This is David Noble, today in Edinburgh, and speaking briefly during the lunch hour at a fantastic conference that we're at today with Andy Griffith. Andy, could you just introduce yourself to Edu Talk listeners, tell us a bit about your background and about why you're in Edinburgh today?
Yeah. Well, thanks, David. I'm Andy. I've been in teacher education now for 17 years as a teacher trainer. I designed training courses for teachers. Before that, I had 12 years full-time as a teacher in London and Liverpool. So we go all around the country, and obviously now in Scotland, Wales, helping to design learning for teachers that they enjoy and has proven impact on, you know, the quality of what they do on children and young people.
The conference today, you're about to give this afternoon's keynote. So what will your key messages be for the delegates?
I think a lot of people here today are leaders or certainly have an influence on the CPD model in their school. So I'll be giving them an opportunity to think about whether their CPD model does actually move teachers to higher levels of quality. I'll be getting them to think about this process of designing learning in such a way that removes the normal barriers to learning, which tend to be what we write about in our latest book, which tend to be cognitive overload, lack of relational trust, and the perception gaps, how well or badly someone's doing something. But also then try to give them an understanding about what excellence looks like. A lot of the time with conferences, people come and get new information, but I'm trying to use it as an opportunity to say to slow people's thinking down and to think about what they're doing that works for each individual teacher and to be more thoughtful about the CPD design that they have. Every teacher's different, but often they're sort of treated the same when it comes to CPD. You know, they're put in a room and, you know, presented to. And I think, you know, the ideal place is where teachers really do thrive year on year and improve and enjoy the process of improving. You know, the head teachers have created a culture where, you know, learning and talking about pedagogy is the norm. So a lot of it is about trying to create space for dialogue and stopping doing things that really are pretty ineffective.
So we've heard during the morning and you touched on it a wee moment ago, the importance of relational trust. Can you just say for the benefit of listeners, you know, what you actually mean by relational trust and you know, just how important it is within what we're discussing about today?
So I heard you interview Professor John Hattie, and you know, he was kind enough to endorse both of our books. The teacher-student relationships are so important, you know, and that has a very, very high effect size in his study. In the classroom, we know that relational trust, if a student or a young person trust their teacher, they tend to go on that learning journey with them. And it's exactly the same principle with a teacher and a leader. So we look at how, you know, and encouraging our work leaders to, you know, to be more human, find out about individual teachers as people first and professionals second. But as professionals to make sure, as I said earlier, that, you know, they're on a CPD journey that's tailored to them. Mm-hmm. And that they model and practice what they preach. You know, a lot of building relational trust isn't rocket science. It's someone having a, you know, a good heart, a good intention, and wanting to carry people with them, and expect, you know, not expect them to do things that they didn't do. So I mean, it can be built very. It's like, you know, Jenga blocks. It can take ages to build, but it can come down very, very quickly. Yeah. And it can stop some teachers wanting to go on a learning journey, you know, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about Professor Hattie and the work with Osiris and yourself and Mark. People will have found out today or will have come because they've heard of the outstanding teaching intervention. Can you just give us, just very briefly, tell us about what that is and why teachers in Scotland should really be engaging with its principles?
Yeah, so I created the intervention in 2006. I've been doing quite a bit of work with schools up to that point, with teachers and with students. And I just I just looked at the existing CPD model just really wasn't differentiating and wasn't making a big impact on what I'd call the average teacher. Lots of teachers have got the opportunity for to self-improve. They're the ones who go on Twitter, they're the ones who go on courses. So I wanted to devise a course for what I would call the grazers in our industry. And they're all good people, but there's lots of very legitimate reasons why a teacher might become a grazer. And what I mean by that, David, is that they pick at things rather than really fully embrace things. And they tend to be a bit more conservative with their pedagogy rather than, you know, try new things out. So the course is... there's a number of different components to it. First of all, it's a modular course. It involves video analysis, 3 modules of training, 3 opportunities for feedback. There's an excellent expert trainer that works with them, and that's key. And at the end of the process, each teacher presents their learning to senior leaders, school governors, invited guests. And it's a real celebration of what they've learned. I think what I'm most proud of about it is that teachers have enjoyed it, and many want to do it again. But it does help to create a culture in a school of people trying things out, reflecting on it, sharing those reflections with colleagues. So it's a research and development course, really, built around strict confidentiality in relation to the videos and giving people the opportunity to try things out and to compare and contrast how they would normally do something. That in relation to areas like engagement, feedback and challenge. You know, I'm proud it's still going, and it seems to be making good traction in Scotland at the moment. A lot of schools here today I've got colleagues on the course already going to second cohorts, so obviously we'd be delighted if more schools wanted to take an interest in it.
And just before we kind of hear from you about how listeners can find out more about that particular aspect of your work and others, understand that you and Mark have got a new book coming out next year.
Yeah, we're writing a book at the moment, and deep in the throes of that, called The Learning Imperative. And it's very much about how we help organisations, not just in education, by the way, improve the quality of learning for the people who work there so that they become better performers. So it's not just about trying to get someone to be a better learner for its own sake, so they become a better performer. In the case today, they become a more high impact teacher. So that's something we're excited about. It's taking us into some new areas and new domains, but looking forward to that coming out. I think it'll be next autumn.
Fantastic, we look forward to seeing that. And so just to finish up, Andy, whether it's outstanding teaching intervention or other aspects of your work, or to find out about the new book, where can listeners go to find out about your work?
Well, there's 2 sources, really. Today's conference is run through Osiris Educational. So if you go on their website, Osiris Educational, they've got an Osiris Scotland dedicated website, and there you'll find case studies from Scottish schools that have been using the OTI programme. And I think there's quite a lot of sort of free resources and stuff like that there already. That would be probably the best port of call for people to go to.
Welcome on to the show for a brief chat today, Mark Burns. And Mark, you've been presenting at the Osiris Educational Conference today. But first of all, could you give us an idea about your kind of background in education?
Okay. I taught for 12 years in inner city schools in Liverpool. And initially, I'd gone out and worked for an insurance company, but it was soulless. And I did some outreach work, some enterprise work at a local school, and that's the thing I looked forward to every week, was the opportunity to go along and work with these guys and see their business grow. And I thought, I need a bit of this. So I saved up and I kind of taught for 12 years. And it's that rootedness. We were talking this morning about the rootedness in the community and developing that was so strong. So it was sort of a natural thing. Both my parents taught. But they'd all taught in tough parts of the country. So, you know, that was, for me, the whole point of it was trying to make a difference with those children and their families.
Yeah, and you spoke 2 different workshops today, or a keynote and a workshop. And I'm just wondering, Mark, if you can kind of distill for the EduTalk listeners the kind of key points you were trying to get across.
Yeah, I think, from the books that we've written, particularly Teaching Backwards, there's 2 key themes The first is the importance of developing shared clarity in our classrooms about what we mean by, you know, what does excellence look like in terms of teaching and learning. And if we can't create shared clarity on that, then we can't have conversations about improvement because there'll be misunderstandings. But that shared clarity works on so many different levels. It works with our children in classroom about the norms and routines we want, about what we mean by a great piece of work, but also with parents as well in terms of shared clarity about what our role is and how they can support it. I think the second one is about the importance of not assuming and the danger of guessing. Schools are busy places, and that danger that people are assuming that people have got shared clarity, or, you know, we talked in a session this morning about the dangers of perception gaps. And some of us busy teachers were working on their own a lot, and we have to make judgments about the quality of what we're doing, and sometimes those judgments are inaccurate. Sometimes we overvalue what we do, and sometimes we undervalue it. But it's trying to slow people down and think about those two key themes.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke about the kind of need for space for teacher learning, and you particularly related that to what we might term low performers in the classroom who are closed learners themselves. Can you say a bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's a context people find themselves in. One of the key things that interests me is why people come into the profession open to learning, and then for whatever reason the system or the context they're in leads them to become close to learning, whether it's a fear of failure because of accountability, whether we just haven't got enough reference points. But that danger of not having the time to think, reflect and plan change means that busy people just stay rationalised and say, I just haven't got time for this, and then we get stuck doing the same thing that we've always done, unintentionally. But I believe school leaders and school systems have got a great responsibility in trying to defrag their schools to make time and space, because if it's really important to the school, then we need to make time for that to happen. And if we don't, then we're going to kind of reap what we sow.
Mm-hmm. You also kind of touched on the transformation that can take place where somebody who we might term as kind of struggling within our staff opens themselves up to kind of self-evaluation, etc., through videoing of their lessons.
Yeah, the key thing is to make sure that there's real shared clarity about what the purpose is of the video, what we're looking at, and signposting before we go in and video what exactly beautiful looks like, so that teacher is not going to get caught out and they get a chance to reflect on the practice. And for many teachers, they find it really, really useful and informative because it opens them up to a world they've not actually seen. Mm. They've been there in a classroom. But we can only change what we're aware of. And if we aren't aware of certain things, we might actually misdiagnose what's going on. Mm-hmm. We've had many teachers who've, before the process, have had aspect A of their practice have been really strong in their opinion. And when they watch it on video, that's the complete reverse. And so they're focusing their energies on fixing things that are actually not broken.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if we look at the kind of other end, the high-performing teachers who are open to new learning, you put up a diagram there about, you kind of touched on sort of four aspects: knowledge, attitudes, skills and habits. So can you just give us, just through your own experience with working with teachers, you know, what these actually look like in certain...
Yeah, I think it's an understanding from the knowledge perspective. They've got really strong assessment knowledge. They know what they're looking for. They've got clarity on that learning journey, so they know what's the purpose of today's lesson, what we're trying to get to, and they know where that's going to build to over the sequence of lessons. I'm a big believer that learning takes place over a sequence of lessons, and that the idea of just planning a great lesson is a misnomer, because they're building blocks that build those things together. I think attitudinally, I think the best teachers are innately curious. Learning's largely invisible, and I think their curiosity leads them to probe, to ask better questions and to seek proof from learners. And also constantly re-evaluating. If it's not working with that child or that group of children, what can I do different to make more of an impact with them? And within that attitude is a sense of perseverance. I'll give you one example. There's a teacher I worked with recently whose approach to change is, if it doesn't work the first time they use it in their classroom, he gives up on it. And he's a science teacher. And we talked about, well, what do scientists look... how do scientists operate? And, it, you know, some things aren't accepted in science if it's a repeatable process. So there's a team now adopt their principle of five. They try it five times before they evaluate whether it's fit for purpose or not. Just trying something once, invariably, given the complexity of education, trying something once and then rejecting it at that point, I think is something that limits your opportunity to develop. In terms of skills, I think the best teachers build rapport with students and their colleagues, and they've got those great interpersonal skills that, you know, some students enjoy school because of that human connectivity. Skills of questioning, I think planning and modelling are key skills that we really undervalue in the education system. And predominantly at the end of it, we talked about habits, and I think the best teachers try and make as many of those habits unconscious, so they stop having to think about it. It's about like the best drivers. The best drivers forget that they do things. And I think in a classroom, the more we can push into unconscious habit the aspects of great teaching, the more space we've got to interact with students and receive and monitor that feedback. So for me, and particularly working with teachers who are different stages of development, is focusing on one small aspect of that and focusing improvement on it, rather than trying to change all those things at once. Because, as you know, teachers are busy people. They haven't got the time to completely deconstruct their practice. So it's trying to identify that there's the common areas that actually, with a change, could make the biggest impact for them.
You mentioned there about modelling, and you referred to that in this afternoon's session. I know as somebody who does a little bit of football coaching on the side, when I'm doing my coaching qualifications, I always get picked up on the lack of modelling. You'll give some sort of key input and what have you, but the assessor or the head coach will be screaming at me to, you know, just model, paint the picture.
Yeah.
You touched on a few ways that we can paint the picture, we can model as sort of fellow professionals and working with young people. Can you just take us through some of the examples of modelling or scaffolding that you referred to this afternoon?
I think the process of being clear on where you want to get to at the end, and then almost working that back. So as a group of teachers, we might sit down as a team and say, well, how would we go about this ourselves? What are the first step? What's the thinking steps in the process? What are the difficult areas? When you're working with a group of teachers who do a pre-mortem and sit down and say, well, when we taught this last year, which bits of it didn't the students get? And how can we model it differently this year to make sure we get that? And I think, you know, like you're saying, in many cases, taking it back to concrete, that visual representation. Mm. We talked about breaking learning down onto a kind of tube line or tram line, so students are clear on that. The reason why sometimes we're not as clear as we should be is because we suffer from the blind spot caused by being an expert. We sometimes think it's easier than it really is. And that's because we've taught it loads of times in the past. Mm-hmm. And the more you teach something, the harder it is to remember what it's like to be a novice. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's thinking about and not neglecting the micro. Not neglecting the micro of the language. Our children are unable to access that, to get to that endpoint, because they lack the language skills. You know, if your subject's a written subject, well, how are they going to put that down into writing? How are they going to develop nuanced arguments, and maybe in language they don't use on a day-to-day basis? So we can look on the macro level, the big picture, but also the micro, and we need to look at both of those things to make sure we can help children close those gaps.
And just finally, Mark, you know, we spoke to Andy earlier on. You must be excited about the book that you're presently working on. Can you just tell us how that is going and what we can look forward to?
Yeah, the previous two books have focused on how do we improve the learning of children in our classrooms by adapting our own teaching. The third book's really, we were intrigued by schools around the country and abroad. Why some of those schools and some of the teams in those schools, why the learning and the performance of those teachers in those teams has improved radically, whereas other similar teams in similar contexts have got stuck. So the book's about exploring ways in which leaders in schools can create a fertile environment for learning for their staff, and how they can design effective CPD and professional learning for teachers. I mean, from 12 years of teaching, I probably had two or three really decent days of high-quality CPD. But a lot of CPD in schools is very kind of one-size-fits-all. Mm. And actually not modelling the key principles that we want pedagogy to look like in our classrooms. And what we're trying to develop with teachers is infinitely more complex than teaching children, because it's the adaptability to so many different contexts. You can teach one way on a Monday morning, but on Friday afternoon when it's snowing, it's a different beast, even with the same class. topic A, topic B. They'll be taught in different ways. So it's really trying to think about effective ways for school leaders and system leaders to create effective learning for teachers so they can improve their performance. And if we get that right, then the system as a whole benefits, because we narrow that gap between the very best people in the system and those guys at the other end of the kind of performance spectrum, and just trying to raise that diet for children.
Mark, thanks for taking time out to join us in the EduTalk today. Just finally, how can listeners find out more about your work and possibly even get in touch with you?
We're on Twitter at oteaching, not oteaching. And also our website is at www.mallet.org.uk, and you can find our books on Amazon.